So, other note, now we've understood the symbols. Now let us understand the notations that you would use. Again, there are four main notations that we will use. One is the external entity. Then we have the processes. We have the data stores. And finally, we have the data flow. So let's look at each one of those notations. So our first notation is external entity. So external entities are objects which are outside the system or with which your system is communicating. That means even though they are outside the system, your system is still communicating. Understand, if your system is not communicating with these external entities, you do not need to show them into your data flow diagram. They are sources or destination of the system's input or and outputs, meaning they are information flows into and out of the system. So where is my data coming from? Maybe it is coming from a data store, external data source, so that will also be a source, and it is going to a external data store where I'm storing the output, so that would also be shown in the system. So those would be external entities outside the system, but the system is communicating, so they fall within your business or organization. So how are external entities represented? Ovals may include outside organizations, people, computer system, or business systems. It could be anything, like maybe my company is outsourcing the finance work to a different thing, so the system, the payroll calculation to a different team. So passing the data to them and getting the data from them would be something that would be. So the external vendors who are processing the payroll would be an external entity. They are sometimes called terminators, source and sinks or actors, and are typically placed on the edges of the diagram. Because they are not a part of your system or organization, or but still need to be depicted, the best way to place them is around the edges, so you can clearly define what falls into the organization, what falls outside. Also, these are sometimes might be terminators, so where your data ends, sources where it starts, and sinks, actors like the payroll organization. That way, a process transforms incoming data flow into an outgoing data flow. That means you're getting the data from one point, and it goes through a process and it gets stored. So I in that process, I'm going to make certain changes to the data, which will for analysis purposes or for modeling purposes, depending where I want to use the data. But processes are basically changes that you're making to the data. Processes are depicted as rectangles. So that's what we saw earlier is, ideally, if I'm using a gain and SAR, so I will use rectangles. So processes are activities carried out which use and transform information, performing computations, performing sorting the data based on logic, directing data flow based on business rules. So I could do anything with the data. Basically, I could get a quote, modify the quote, or I could get an order, modify the order, or I am using the calculation to understand what is the kind of sales, who has done the sales, and sorting that information based on either the business rules or the logics. Data stores is where your data is stored in the system. They are also called files and hold information for later use. Data stores are represented with rectangles with two parts and labeled with a simple name such as orders. So data source could be anything where I'm storing my billing information or the order information, what are the products that have been ordered, the various categories that have been ordered, and all of that. So I could put my data source data store anywhere it is there. So it is represented as a rectangle with two parts. That's again the gain and SAR that we are talking about. So these are the two parts of the data store. Then finally, we come to the fourth notation, which is data flow, which represents the pathway along the through which information moves between external entities, processes, and data source. Is it depicted as arrows on the diagram and labeled with the name of the data that goes through it, such as billing details. So all the details for billing, or it could be order information. That means all the orders that I'm placing. Supporting documentation such as data dictionary and process definitions are used to provide additional description, details and descriptions of the components depicted in the data flow diagram. So if I'm using certain abbreviations or certain processes as a which are internal to my organization, then I will probably put them in a map kind of a thing to as external or a data dictionary, so that people are able to understand it clearly. Okay, so now let's discuss what are the rules that govern the data flow diagrams. First thing, each process should have at least one input and one output. Now understand, like we discussed earlier, a process is a change that you're making to something. Now if I'm making a change, even if I'm cooking using my raw materials or my groceries to make an item, that's the process. There is going to be a process where I probably chop things, I saute them. So it definitely needs to have input, which is my raw material, and the final product that I create will be my output. Now the same thing applies to our data flow diagrams. When I talk about a process, it has to have something that is going into the system and it has something that is coming out of the system. So you would have raw data going into the system and you would have completed data coming out from the system. Even something like a piece of material going to the tailor following a process and giving you a dress or whatever in exchange for it. Each data source should have at least one data flow in and one data flow out. So even the same thing that applies to the process applies to the data store also. It should have something going in and something coming out. So obviously, I will probably have the data flowing out first and probably going into the data store later, but it would happen somewhere during the process. Data stored in a system must go through a process. It does not make sense. I'm going to a tailor and I just give him the material and after some days I collect the material back. Then why did I go to the tailor? Why am I investing the time and energy? So that means there is something that needs to be done there. There is some process that needs to be followed. Either I am transforming the data, adding value to the data, maybe something as simple as getting the date of birth and calculating the age. But still, I've gone through a process of subtracting the age from the current date and time and all of, the date of birth from the current date and time to get the age. So that is a process. So it can be something as simple as this. All processes in a DDFD go to another process or a data source. So either I will directly output the data after calculating the age, or I will probably put it to another process. So somebody else who is going to maybe calculate whether he's an adult or not. And then based on that, give him access to the services. So I would calculate something like 18 plus and above. Now, there are various levels and layers when it comes to DFDs. So let's look at what are the various levels and layers in a DFD. So a data flow diagram can dive into progressively more detail by using levels and layers, zeroing in on a particular piece. DFD levels are numbered 0, 1, 2, 1 or 2 and occasionally go to level 3 or beyond. Okay, before we go on to levels, let's understand what they mean. Now understand, when we are talking about a data flow diagram, I can go from a macro level to micro level with each of the activities. So since this is already a data flow diagram, I probably will need to go down one level or max two. That's the reason they have said that I can probably will never have, it's not that we are never going to have it, but very rarely is it going to go above to three and beyond. So what does level 1 or the context diagram do? It provides an overview of the entire system being analyzed or modeled in a single high level process. It shows the relation of the system to external entities and is designed to be easily understood by a wide audience. So what am I doing over there? When I talk about a DFD level 0 or a context diagram, that means now I'm talking about how the organization on the whole works. When I talk about the organization and in the whole, I'm talking about various departments. How are they communicating? How is the relationship between the departments? From where does the data flow on a larger perspective? So I could have something like the operations team. So if a person's salary has to be calculated, the operations team would probably give the number of leaves that the person has taken, whether they have taken scheduled leaves or unscheduled leaves. The reason for that being that certain leaves might be paid, certain leaves might not be paid, and the process of the organization or the manager would decide whether his leaves need to be paid or do not need to be paid. So that information would be passed on to the payroll system, who is calculating that the amount that needs to be finally given out to the employee. And they would then give that amount for each and every employee to the finance team, who probably will dispatch it to the bank or release it to the bank or in individual accounts. Now, this is a high level system. So this becomes my level zero, the context diagram on how the overall salary getting dispatched to the employee works. Now comes to the level one. What does a level one say? It provides a detailed breakdown of the context diagram by breaking out high level processes into sub processes and highlighting the main functions of the system. This may require additional data flows and data stores to link them together. You might require, not necessarily. So if we go back to the example that we were just discussing, now I can probably break down what does operations do, how do they calculate. I can break down how the payroll system or the activities that the payroll system would use to calculate, and finally the processes or the activities that the finance team would follow to release the salaries. So this becomes my level one, where I'm now breaking down my context diagram or my level zero into more sub-processes and more micro-level work that is being done. Then we have level 2. It provides more detailed breakdown of the sub-processes from level 1. So again, level 1 would probably list the activities for each department in a more high-level perspective. So I can use level 2 to now break down so if there are multiple people or multiple processes that are being followed, I can then break down those activities further for level 2. So if you realize that in this particular example, we will not need to go beyond even level 1 or max to level 2. So there is barely any level 3 or 4 that would exist. Are possible but less common, because it can create complexity that makes it difficult to communicate and model effectively. At the end of the day, I'm drawing the data flow diagram for better visibility, better understanding. And if I'm going to make it complicated, then that entire data flow diagram would lose its importance. Using DFD layers, cascading levels can be nested directly in the diagram, providing a cleaner look with easy access to the deeper dive. So I can do it layers to show the different levels in the diagram. I can do it in the same diagram where I'm nesting one thing into another, and depends which looks cleaner, which is easy to access when you have a deeper dive. How do you want to depict it? This would be designing the layers or showing the cascading levels of the layers would be up to you, but the levels is something that you would probably use to get a better representation of the entire structure. Now we've studied everything about our data flow diagram, the symbols that we need, the notations that we need, the rules that we need to follow. So now let's build one and see how it actually gets built. So let's understand it. So what are the various steps? Identify major inputs and outputs in your system? Build a context diagram. So my level 0 is obviously where I'll start with the context diagram. Then decide, does the context diagram need to be changed into a level 1 data flow diagram? Then decide if I need to go to level 2 or more than level 2, and confirm. Finally, once you have designed all the levels, then you will confirm the accuracy of your final diagram. So once I've finished drawing all the levels and I have finally decided the accuracy, I will now review it carefully so that I can confirm the accuracy. Again, you will need to probably sit down with your notes and focus on how the flow of information is working. Is it making sense? Is it not making sense? You can probably even randomly just ask somebody from friends or colleagues to see if it's making sense to them as a third level perspective, so that it will make sense to your technical users also and your non-technical users also. Verify all the necessary data sources are included in the diagram. Even though data sources are external and have multiple data sources, I would want to ensure everything is finally included in the diagram. The final diagram should be easy for others to understand how the system functions. So anybody would be able to help you, even a family member. If you show it to them, they should be able to understand how the system functions. That's when you have correctly designed a data flow diagram. Before presenting your final diagram, get feedback from your colleagues to ensure it is comprehensibility. Once I've done it with my family members, I can even get my colleagues to review it and decide whether it is comprehensible or not. Now, how many types of data flow diagrams are there? I'm talking about logical data flow diagrams. Then I'm talking about physical data flow diagrams. Then I'm talking about process charts, is something other than a data flow diagram. So two of them. So let's go back to logical data flow diagrams. What is the definition? It defines a specific information flow. They show the information is being sent, which entities are affected, and what general processes take place on it. So like I said earlier, when I was talking about the Amazon shipping, so I would be able to pass on the information via a logical data flow diagrams, where multiple entities would receive the same information, maybe the identical information or different information, and what are the processing that they are doing at their end. Business activities are the processes that are depicted in a logical data flow diagram. These diagrams do not focus on the technical aspects of a process or system. Non-technical should be able to understand logical data flow diagrams. So business activities are the processes that are depicted in a logical data flow. So how each activity or each task in the business is working and everything would be depicted in a logical data flow diagram. So the diagram does not focus on the technical aspects. Understand, I'm talking about a logical data flow diagram. So it is not talking about technical aspects of the system or the process. Rather, it is talking about how the data is flowing. That means whether you are technical or non-technical, coming down to the last point, they should be able to understand how the data is flowing. It should be comprehensive to both technical as well as non-technical people that are part of the project. Then I have physical data flow diagrams. Now, physical data flow diagrams focus on the implementation of an information flow, specifying the software, the hardware, files and people involved. So everything. When I talk about a physical data flow, then I have to actually speak about which software am I going to use for processing. So which data is going into which software? Is there a hardware that I need to consider, a server that I need to consider? Is there a particular file where the flow is going? What are the people that are going to be involved? Because obviously, if I'm talking about certain software requirements, there would be people who would have the know-how of that software. They facilitate the development of code needed to implement a data system. So again, a physical data flow diagram will be more technical. That means it will be more for the technical people to understand how the data is flowing through the entire system, through which tools and what is the kind of output that's going to be there and how the output will need to be converted from one tool to another. Logical data flow diagram focus on business activities of a process and don't dwell into technical aspects. While on the other hand, a physical data flow diagram would go into the technical aspects. Both physical and logical data flow diagrams can describe the same information flow when used together and can provide detail that either diagram on its own. So where my logical data flow talks more about non-technical stuff and the physical talks more about technical stuff, I need to be able to combine both to get the most out of the and the detail on the same. So probably a technical person who's developing the system will use both or combine both to get the final data flow that is working. It is important to consider whether you need both types of diagrams. So especially if you're designing a system, something that has a lot of technical aspects, then you will probably need both. Otherwise, I think the logical data flow diagram should be perfectly fine. Okay, so process charts are using more of symbols in a vertical way to show the various stages of a process, and we will look at them to understand. Conceptual information is recording such as the start and end of a journey, the distance and the mode of transport. So when it comes to a process chart, I am trying to more understand how the goods are flowing or how the data is flowing. Is there a delivery or an inspection that needs to be done? How does the entire thing flow and what are the steps that need to be followed? So an outline can help identify key areas of concern before recording the process in more detail. So when I'm talking about outline chart, I might just show that maybe getting the goods from the supplier or my goods flowing to the retailer to identify where exactly can I do this. This type can be used for the purpose of investigation and cost involved in the process. So I can have various stages where the goods are being dispatched, the goods are being collected, and how the entire process, so what is the cost that are involved, can I reduce the cost in any way, and all of that would come into the picture. Full process charts use symbols and can be viewed from the perspective of the material, worker or the equipment. The same symbols can have different meanings on the type of chart being used. For example, a delay symbol can equipment not in use or an equipment type or chart waiting to carry out a task or on a two-handed chart. So now when we talk about before we go on to the fourth point, why do we use a two-handed chart? Let's talk about we'll have symbols and can be viewed from different perspectives. I can view it from the perspective of a material. That means what is the processing that is being done on a material. I can also do it from a worker level as to what is the work that he is doing. I can do it from an equipment level to understand which the material would flow from which equipment to another, depending where is the analysis that I need to do. So obviously I'm not going to have multiple symbols. It can be get very confusing, but I can use the same symbol to depict a lot of meaning things. Like it says in the example, a delay symbol that if you see over here is the last symbol at the end, could indicate either that the equipment is not in use or the equipment will be waiting to carry out a task when I draw a two-handed chart. What is a two-handed chart or a two-handed process chart? Record the motions performed by two hands during a task and are usually drawn on pre-formatted diagrams. So when I'm talking about a two-handed chart, and we'll look at this in detail, is when I already have a diagram and I'm working on the entire diagram, and there is a task which requires the use of both the hands. That means I am pulling with one hand and pushing with the other hand. So things like this, which require the use of both the hands, would be done on pre-formatted diagram, because these are special tasks that need to be prepared. Common symbols that are promulgated by the American Society of Mechanical Engineers and also known as the ASME symbols, which is nothing but American Society of Mechanical Engineers. So first I have the circle, which is operation, a main part where the part or material or product is usually modified. So like in earlier, right now we are into the process chart, but earlier when we depicted the process, we said we are going to use a rectangle. So this is now in a process chart, I will depict an operation by a circle. Then I have a square, which is inspection, indicates a check for quality or quantity. So something that is moving from the factory to the warehouse will have this diagram, which will indicate quality. And when I move the goods from the warehouse to transportation, it will check for quantity. Then I will have transport, which is depicted by an arrow, the movement of workers, materials or equipment. Like I said, it could be once I have it at the warehouse, I'm delivering it to the retailer, then I would use this icon, which indicates transport. The warehouse would be indicated by the inverted triangle, which is the storage, which is controlled storage in which materials is received into or issued from a store or item it is retained for reference purposes. So again, this could have multiple meanings, where I say either I'm receiving into, that means my supplier is sending me the material, or I am sending a product to the store, or there is some reference and for which it is being stored by me. Then I have the D, which is the delay or temporary storage, indicates a delay in the process or an object laid aside until required. That means suppose I have an intermittent project, that the product that is created, and I basically keep that product on hold to process it further. Business processing modeling notation, which is BPMN. The business process modeling is a methodology for representing, analyzing and improving business processes in a formal and structured way. So we have so many things. So now if we have to do business process modeling, we want to do it as, since it's related to the business, you want to do it in a formal and structured way. Now the moment I talk about a formal and structured way of analyzing and representing everything, it has to use certain symbols and notations. So we are going to, what are the standards for that? We are just going to look at that. It involves creating visual models that illustrate the sequence of events, the decision points, the outputs involved in the delivery of a product or service. So if I am talking about, say, like we spoke about earlier about the Amazon delivery, so, and the order management system. So what we said over there is the order comes in. First, I verify, do I have the order in stock? Based on that, I may go back to the customer for the payment. If I have it in stock, then the payment is processed successfully. I will place the order and it will move ahead. So it tells me what are the activities that are happening at the background, the decision points, what is the input, is the customer, what is the output, the delivery through the product. And so that is how you would depict business process modeling. And I would put this in a more graphical format. The aim of BPM is to enhance the efficiency, quality and effectiveness of business processing while reducing the cost and increasing customer satisfaction. Way back in the first chapter, I said the best way to depict profit is either increase the sales or reduce the expenses. So when I use business process modeling, what am I doing is looking at getting the system more efficient, trying to bring in better quality, trying to even make the existing business processes more effective. And so finally, what is the outcome is reduced cost. And obviously, if I have the cost reduced, that means the customer is very happy. BPM may involve various steps such as process mapping, discovery, simulation, analysis, and improvement. So first, I map the process, I discover what is happening, I create a simulation of the new model or the system, I analyze it, and I work on ways for improvement. BPM describes and communicates the current state and the future state of the business process. So I will initially, maybe for process mapping and discovery, I will use the current state. What are the processes that are there in the system currently? And for the future state, I will depict and use a model or a process model which will tell me what am I looking at in the future. How, what is the change from your current state to your future states? So I have to look at all these steps, which is process mapping, discovery, simulation, analysis, and improvement. A summary list of so what are the features of BPM? A diagram representing a sequence of activities and events from one end to another. So it is obviously, it says process modeling. So I'm going to talk about where does it start and where does it end. So from end to end, right from creation of the product to the final delivery of the product. It focuses on processes, actions, and activities. A business process model includes both IT and people processes. It's cross-functional, combining the work and documentation for multiple departments. So it focuses on processes. What is the process that is being followed? What is the action that needs to be done? What are the various activities that are done? What is the action that is being done on the goods? Is it being moved from one place to another? Everything would be depicted in a business process model. So I would be talking from an IT level, that means from a system level, as well as from a people level on it. So I would consider both the processes, both IT and non-IT, in a business process model. So also, not only that, I can include data from multiple departments is where I talk about combining the work and documentation of multiple departments. So that's what I can do. So not only IT and people, I can even do documentation and multiple departments. Resources are processed in BPM. People are waiting, are involved in what they do, when and for what reasons, especially in four flow diagrams. So it's when I do a BPM, I have to involve the people, because without them it would be very difficult for me to understand what are the resources that are being used, why is certain tasks being done, how are they doing it, why are they doing it, also when are they doing it. External organization process system may be called in BPM. So if I am communicating with an external organization or process or system, then I might want to include them in the BPM. The process models are more detailed in larger organizations due to scale and complexity. BPM is defined by computerized tools or software used in applying its methods that evolve over a period of time. As the complexity of the organization or the larger the organization, the complexity of my process models is definitely going to increase, because I have more tools, maybe more people, maybe more resources that are going to have to come into my BPM. Again, I might use computerized tools, softwares in applying the various methods, and might change things over a period of time. So this is the hierarchy. You have the, firstly, the mega process, then the major, the sub-processes, the activity, and finally the task. So what does the mega process talk about? The highest level processes identified by an enterprise, 2 or 3 of the average of 4 or 6 mega processes, usually form the core value chain for the enterprise. The remaining are primarily support processes. So the mega process talks about what are the main processes that are being followed by the organization. So you will have 2 or 3, max 4 or 6, that are the main or the mega ones, the bigger ones, and then which drive towards the vision of the organization, and which are talking about the core value, before we go into the various support processes. What is now a major process? A subdivision of a mega process that represents a collection of sub-processes. A collection of major processes take on the complete processing of the mega process. So what am I going to do? Now I have the mega process. The mega process is not going to suffice for my analysis or my simulation. So what I will need to do is break it down into smaller parts. So I will break it down into smaller major processes. Then I will break down the major process into the next step, which is hierarchy, which is sub-processes. What is a sub-process? A division of a major process that represents collection of sub-processes. There is a variable number of levels to sub-processes to bridge the hierarchy between the major processes and the activity. So basically, the sub-processes is going to bridge, act as a bridge between major and the activity. So obviously, my sub-processes are going to be broken down into activity, and then each activity will be broken down into task. So what is an activity? An activity is a unit of work performed by one function and at one time with one mode of operation. While on the other hand, the task is a work step performed to complete an activity. A number of work steps may be required to complete an activity. Where an activity is a unit of work that is going to be performed by the job function. It is one time with one mode of operation, but at the other time, I will have multiple tasks to finally complete the activity. Five tips to master. What do you need to keep in mind? Detail every step of the individual process. So that is your work step. Use a minimalistic approach. Try to minimize as much as possible. Use a proper BPM software. A business process model may appear to be simple drawing, but it's actually quite complex, and it involves different components, shapes and size that are used to define particular actions and processes. So like a network activity diagram or a net flow or a data flow diagram, where I can draw it to an extent by hand, it is preferable to use a BPM software to design a business process model. Again, understand, a business process model is way more complex than a data flow diagram or an activity diagram, and probably a combination multiple data flow diagrams and multiple activity diagrams. So you want to use the right components and use the right shapes to define the particular actions and processes. Hence, it is advisable to utilize suitable BMP software that supports the latest business process modeling. BPM 2.0 approved by the object management group. Create labels suggesting the type of action, and remember to detail alternative routes. So you want to do something that supports the latest business process modeling standard. So any tool that you look at, you have to ensure it supports the version 2.0, which has been approved. Summarizing whatever we've discussed in this chapter, understanding the flow of work or a process is essential to comprehend any business. The flow analysis should be the first step of any consulting or analysis exercise. Business flows can be studied at different levels with workflow, information flow, process flow, and service flow. Several techniques like activity diagram, data flow diagrams, BPMN and process charts can be used to analyze the flow perspective. Each tool has its own pros and cons. Understanding the flow assists in identifying the fundamental action that need to be performed in a business. This understanding is crucial for effective business management and process optimization. Thank you.